session number 8985, Reel 6.
Mr. Parry, Reel 6.
So she gave me another beer, and then I was realising I was being stupid anyway. I decided I'd better get out of this place, so I polished it off and set off. I don't really know particular town I was going to at all, but anyway, I got out of Valmont, and I was walking down, it had started to drizzle again, I was walking down a very long straight, what I call a typical French road with poplars and things on the side, little dirt road in actual fact, it wasn't a tarred road, and a fellow passed me on a bicycle, and he just went on. I reckon I walked about maybe 5 miles, and I thought, well, I'm finished now, I've had this business, it's nonsense, I've just got to get into the hands of someone that's going to help me. I just can't get on like this. I had terrible blisters on my feet. I really was hungry. I'd had this steak cooked up and so forth. But I mean, we're now talking about 4 days after I'd really eaten anything worth talking about since I was shot down. And I said, next farm I come to, I'm just going to go in, that's all, and see if I can get any help. I've just got to take a chance, provided I don't obviously see Germans there. If I do, well, I can't do that. So I said, been 5 miles, I came across a lot of farms are like that in France, that the house and all the buildings, the farm buildings, are all built into a sort of rectangle. They're all part and parcel of the same thing, really. And across one corner, like across there, the big gates, they were all open. So I thought, right, I'm going, and I went through, and over in that corner, there was a group of men, including this chap that had gone past on a bicycle. So I went over, and I told them the same story again. And they said, yes, and they took me inside a barn. I don't know how many there were, 4 or 5 of these chaps, maybe 6, I don't know. There were a bunch of them anyway, farm workers, I suppose. One went, the chap that had passed me on the bicycle, he cleared off. And he came back a little while afterwards with a woman. And she said, in English, you're English. So I said, yes, I am. But if you look at my battle dress, you'll find that I've got Rhodesia written on it, because I lived in Rhodesia and I came over to join the Air Force. She said, you're a German. I said, I'm not a German. She said, well, we'll find out. And if you are, you won't go out of this room alive. You'll be killed. And these characters were, you know, there's no chance of escaping. So she said, do you know London? I said, well, yes, as well as you can be expected to know it. If you're talking about the city of London, the answer to that is no. I know St. Paul's Cathedral, but anyone that knows the city has got to work there or something for years. I mean, I still believe that to be true. The city is a terrible place unless you really know it. But I said, you know, Piccadilly Circus, Leicester Square, the West End, yes, I do know. So she said to me, what is that famous shop in Piccadilly? So I said, well, it must be Fortnum and Mason's you're talking about. She said, that's right. And she asked me about 4 questions of that sort. And then she told me, I always get my tea from Fortnum and Mason's. In fact, she said, you are English. And I'm sure you would like some nice tea. I make proper tea. And if this war goes on for 20 years, I've got enough tea in the cellars of this farmhouse to keep me going. And she was marvellous. I don't know what her name was. And I had a big plate of bacon and eggs and really good, nice French bread and plenty of tea. And then she said, I've telephoned and they're coming for you. I said, who are coming for me? She said, oh, no, don't worry. She said, it's the resistance. They're coming for you. And a little fellow came in much later on. He arrived in a car and he came in and she said, "I'd like you to meet Mr. Barter." You know Barter Shoes?
Well, yes.
He was one of those, apparently. And she said, "He's with the Gestapo." So I used a few ungentlemanly words to her and she went a bit pale on that and she said, no, he is with the Gestapo, but he's one of us too. He works for them and he works for us, so we know what they're going to do next. So after a talk, I was taken back into Vernon, where I was put in the care of a woman who was the, what do you call, switchboard on the local telephone exchange. She was also useful because the Gestapo would be talking to one another and, you know, she knew when they were going to move people in. And I then got somebody else to look at my shoulder and he said, "Well, it's just nothing." Because I couldn't move it very well. I think this must have been this thing resting on a nerve, but they didn't seem to think it was anything. So then one morning, the two Americans arrived. Just goes to show. Perhaps they were clever. I don't know. They got back to England all right and I didn't. But anyway. They were really ridiculous. They looked like Americans. Their berets were not worn in any way like a Frenchman would wear them. And we were told now we had to get out and go somewhere else. In fact, we had to go to a chateau which would belong to one of the Rothschilds, which the Germans had taken over, quite close to Vernon, somewhere there. And we would be met there. And she told us how to get out of Vernon. Now, it's too terrible. We go down the street. This is early in the morning. Every corner we came to, wait, one of these Americans go forward. Oh, I just try to keep away from them because of anyone acting guilty. I've never seen anything like it. I mean, they were, and they'd already told me they came down on a raid on Schweinfurt, I think it was, and they'd run out of petrol and they come down. And the one was a lieutenant and the other one was a master sergeant. And the lieutenant said as soon as we landed, he got out his compass. Now, we all had these tiny little compasses which gave you a vague idea which was north and south, etc. And he said, "We ran..." And he said, "After we'd been running for an hour, we came to the edge of the woods and they were back where their aircraft was." How can you run with a compass? I mean, no, okay, I'm just trying to give you the... Oh, dear. Anyway, cut a long story short, we did get to this place and we were put in a gardener's potting shed. Quite comfortable. Not in the main. The building was stripped. The Germans had left it, but there was nothing there. It was just bare. And I don't know whether it was I drank water, which I'd put in purification pills I drank out of a river, but I'd given double the amount of chlorine pills. There was one pill per pint, and this was about half a pint. Same bottle I got for this chap at the of wine, just a small bottle. I put in two pills. It said, "Wait 20 minutes. I made myself, I'd lost a certain amount of blood in this hole, I think, at that stage. I made myself wait for half an hour, then I knocked it off. Now, whether there were houses backing on this pretty little river, it was at a village, I think, called Lyon-la-Forêt, where I did this. Anyway, be that as it may, it was either that or we ate fruit off the trees in the orchard there. But anyway, I finished up with... dysentery. Now, it may possibly have been, you know, because I'd had it in Malta or something, I don't know. But I was desperately ill, really desperately ill. And they shifted me into a house there, one of caretaker's house or something. And sent for a doctor and he came and said, no, I must go to hospital. Anyway, they said, no, they couldn't do that. They took me to a clinic, actually, a French clinic, which was used by the Germans, and the woman that ran it lived upstairs, and they had me in there, and these Germans, I suppose, used to come in. But I went a bit round the bend. I tried to strangle that woman one day. I thought she was trying to kill me or something. I was certainly delirious. So anyway, they didn't like that very much. I she was a bit marked around the neck or something before she could get out of my clutches. And she was a middle-aged woman. So another ambulance comes, which is, they were really quite remarkable. And I'm carted off in this, and I'm taken to a place somewhere near Evro, where the woman, I know her name was Renee and he was Hubert. You never knew their names, you see. They never, in case you were caught, they never wanted to you to know. And she'd been a theatre sister. And they looked after, and they had a doctor and his wife. Both the doctors came to look at me. And they prescribed all sorts of stuff. And I weighed 68 pounds, which is not very much. I suppose, what's that, about 5 stone. I'm still in, working in pounds from Rhodesian days. They don't use stone in that part of the world.
Just under 5 stone.
And, yeah, I weighed nothing. And I actually did sit in my coffin afterwards, and I complained it was a very rough-looking coffin. No self-respecting person would like to be buried in a thing like that. So I was only temporarily, we'd have dug you up and you could have gone back to England. But I had a glass of champagne in my coffin. But they were marvellous to me, those people. They were absolutely marvellous.
What was this coffin?
Hmm?
What was this coffin?
Well, they made a coffin because they thought I was going to die.
They actually made one for
you? Yeah. Well, I mean, they thought there was no chance, so I must have been tougher than they thought. But I think the only, well, there were a number of amusing incidents when I was getting better. A few of the local women and their children came in to talk to me. I suppose they wanted to see this heroic RAF pilot or something, you see, and I had to talk to them, obviously, in French, which was improving by then. But it just goes to show the fallacy of ever literal translations. One of them said to me, "What do you boys in the RAF do in the evening?" So I said, "Well, what do? We go down to the pubs." So I said, "Oh, we went down to Les Maisons Publiques." Well, they gathered their children clutched him. I gather a mess of people, it's a brothel, you see. Well, and there were a few incidents like that when I say to a girl, "You know, you are warm," instead of "you have warmth," sort of, you know, the usual things which any foreigner would make, but they were amusing. But the only other thing was that the doctor and his wife, who were very nice, they went off skiing at Christmas time somewhere. And they said, "All right, we've got a stand-in doctor for you." And both René and Hubert were out somewhere, and the farm was locked up. And I'm lying there, and I was still pretty rough at that time. And all of a sudden, I see a face at the window. It was a young doctor, a girl of mid-20s, I should think. Very pretty girl, she happened to be. Put up the window, climbed in, pushed the ladder away, and then closed the window more or less, and said, "You know, I'm your medsow now, you see." So I said, "Oh, you know." So she did whatever she had to do with me. Incidentally, I'd had then a thing they called periphlebite. It was phlebitis in my left leg. Because I forgot to tell you that I had a surgeon come down from Paris who operated on me. And to get this out, I was rotten here, absolutely rotten. And he operated on my leg here, fell enough, and drained it from there. And,
operated on the veins, you mean?
No, this is before I had this. This was muck, pus and stuff just poured out of me. I was rotten.
Out of your thigh?
It came out of my thigh, but it was really all in the stomach area as well, apparently. I really was ill, I mean, very ill indeed. This chap was pleased with me because he wouldn't speak. I found out he spoke completely fluent English. He was supposed to be one of the top surgeons in Paris that had come down. I don't know his name. He had a very high-ranking rosette of the Legion of Honour. He was some sort of a knight of that. Grand Knight or something, something fancy anyway, very high ranking bloke. And he spoke to me and asked me questions in French. And when he'd finished the operation, the night come round, he then spoke to me in perfect English, and I said, why didn't you do that before? He said, because you were going to talk when you were around the thing. And he said, you think in French these days, and if the Gestapo or anyone had come in, I could be operating on a Frenchman. And he said, you did speak in French. And he said, Germans wouldn't know the difference between an Englishman speaking French or a Frenchman. He said, they can't speak French. And that's the last I ever saw of him, you know. But then after that op, I got this phlebitis, which was the reason that I was taken prisoner. Because I couldn't walk, the whole leg came up like a balloon.
How did you come to be taken prisoner?
So, well, I was then taken eventually. The René said, you've got to go, you've got to go. You know, we've got 13, you're the 13th Air Force man we've had here. And we want to get 20 before the end of the war. You must go. And it was all done nicely. I don't mean they were horrible. She said, you're all right now. You just can't walk, but that's all right. You can, we'll ship you up to Paris. And so I had a young woman whose name, I forget, her husband, fun enough, was English. And he was locked up in French prison in Paris, not for any thing he'd done, but because of the very fact he was English, he was interned, in other words. And Jean-Pierre was the name of the chap that came with this girl, and they took me down to the station at Evreux, I suppose, one night, and we got on a train, and I've often laughed about that, as you know. Well, they do it a little bit in the trains here now. The French trains have always had seats reserved for war wounded and pregnant women, and they just said to about out, you know, war wounded. Well, the chef got out and gave his seat. Oh, the carriage was crowded. Anyway, I got a seat. I doubt if I could have stood. It was genuine, but not a war wound, which they would, of course. I was not allowed to talk, keep your mouth shut entirely. And then I went into some people in Paris, an old colonel of the Foreign Legion or something. He'd have been in Shanghai, one of these places, and his daughter, he was a widower, stayed there for a while. Then they changed me over to a woman who was reputed to be one of the richest women in France. I do know her name, and I've seen her. I took my wife to see her afterwards. She was a Madame Jeannette Huet, and she lived in the Avenue President Wilson in Paris. Do you know Paris by any chance?
No.
Well, it's the other side of the river from the Eiffel Towers, a place called the Palais de Chaillot. And I think the tube station, or the metro station, is called the Trocadero. And she was right opposite there. Apparently it's a very wealthy area and spectacular. I think this flat she had was about 18 rooms. Beautiful place, and had a housekeeper and so forth and so on. And I lived a luxurious life when I was with her. I wasn't allowed to smoke cigarettes because only common people smoke cigarettes. I smoked cigars. Now we're talking about wartime Paris when things were terrible. We ate turkey, goose. I suppose she and I knocked off a bottle of brandy a day. Really, cognac, I mean proper stuff, you know, sort of have a reviver about 10 o'clock in the morning and then gradually polish this off, and probably once a week, absolutely top-class bottle of champagne. And she brought in various people, resistance people. We had a dinner party one night. I always think of that. My French still was not what it should be. And one of the big shot resistance women from somewhere down in the centre of France, I don't know her name, except she was Madeleine, very pretty, had a couple of daughters somewhere along the line. Her husband had cleared off to North Africa to join the French forces there, and she was well into the resistance. And she said, aimez-vous les escargots? So I said, escargot? And if you can think of a pretty woman going like that... No. So anyway, they killed themselves with laughter. They thought that was really funny. But I was very worried when I was staying with this woman. I don't know, I just had what's termed these days a gut feeling that all was not well. Now, her husband was a big shot in some big company which had had places in Belgium, France and Germany. I see, it was something connected with, I thought they called it the Surchauffe Compagnie de France or something, but I'm uncertain of that. But anyway, whatever it was an important enough for the Americans to send a submarine to pick him up in the south of France and take him to America where he was. And she knew about the fact he had some girlfriend or something like that in a little apartment where he'd had this girl, but it was vacant. And I said to her, Jeanette, let's go there. I just don't like it. I don't like the feeling I've got. I just feel that we're going to get ourselves caught. And for you, that's much more serious than for me. And they always used to say, n'avez-vous pas la confiance? You speak French, do you? I mean, so well. Well, what's the answer to that? No, I haven't got it. How can you say it? Your life and everything that's being done for you is in their hands. So I say, oui, but, you know, I just have this feeling, oh, everything's all right. So one morning, on the 7th of February, 3 o'clock in the morning, the Gestapo arrive.
How did they arrive?
They knocked on the door. They were quiet. They had obviously people that you couldn't have got out anyway, and it was answered by the housekeeper. And in they came. I was trying to dress. I mean, I knew what it was as soon as I heard voices. I was in a back bedroom. I was trying to dress, and I did have the honour of being taken, I believe, by the Gestapo chief in Paris. I suppose he came because of the area it was in. Little swine, he gave me a couple of backhanders across the face, you know, and meanwhile there's a fellow with a pistol held at you. And I said to him, how dare you do that to an officer of the RAF? And I was carted off to, not the Avenue Foch, the other one. That was Avenue Foch was the Gestapo headquarters, it was the other one, I've forgotten its name now. We all went, including the housekeeper and a little girl and the housekeeper's husband, who was the concierge. And we were shut in a cupboard. Then eventually they hiked me out.
What do you mean by a cupboard?
A cupboard under a stairs, literally a cupboard. We were just there, we were pushed down. No, these like stairs ran with a cupboard under the stairs. We were all shoved in a cupboard and the door shut on you.
How many of you?
Well, there was Jeanette and I, and the housekeeper and her husband and a little girl. So that's five of us were herded in there. Not for long, but we were there. And then I was brought out and taken into a very big room where this little so-and-so was, with a couple of henchmen, with a great big picture of Hitler on the wall behind, a great big roaring stove. And they claimed that I was a spy, you see, I was fairly in clothes. So I had my, what are called dog tags, I suppose, and I had these and said, that proves I'm an RAF officer. They said, that doesn't mean anything. So they just grabbed them and took them off and threw them in the stove. And I didn't laugh, but I was inside a bit amused because they're asbestos. But don't let that fool you. They burnt all right. They didn't withstand the heat of that roaring hot stove. It was, I grant you, it was hot, but they just burned up, and that was that. And they said, now what are you? And fortunately, none of them could speak English, so we had to talk French. And obviously, I made my French as bad as I could. In the course of conversation, they brought in, and no names were spoken, but they brought in, what's her name, the great heroine of the war, the Churchill woman.
Odette?
Yes, Odette. They brought her in. Now, she just had her nails removed. God, she looked an absolute wreck. I only recognised her from her book afterwards.
In what way did she look a wreck?
Well, of the torture they'd been doing to her. I mean, she'd had these nails pulled out, fingernails and toenails, and they'd only just recently been done. God, she looked terrible.
Can you describe what she looked like?
Well, a wreck is as good as anything. Unkempt, hair all over the place. Well, she just looked terrible. I mean, I was terrified when I saw this woman, because they said to me, "Do you know her?" And my mouth must have hung open. And she said, "No, no, no. I don't know him." And they must have seen my face, I suppose, to see. I mean, I'm not joking. I was absolutely petrified to see this woman. She was an absolute wreck. Really terrible. Her clothes were torn. She was filthy. And, too awful. But I only realised after I read her book that, I should think if you got her book, you will find that those dates will coincide with where she had her nails pulled out by a Frenchman, actually, but still. I was taken into one room where there was like a bundle of rags on the floor, a pile of them, and they were all people that had been tortured and things. Because when they scooped us up at the same time, more or less, I know that was this night, but at the same time, they broke the whole of about 600 Frenchmen were taken, they broke the whole of the sort of big lot of the resistance. And I think I'm going to look at this Barbie case, this Klaus Barbie, because the headquarters of the British liaison with the French was in Lyon. And this woman that I told you I stayed with, Jeanette Huet, when the chief was caught in Lyon, she actually financed the British Secret Service, if you wish to call it that, I told, for 6 weeks. Out of her own pocket. She was apparently exceptionally wealthy. Now, I saw the, and I mean, I was absolutely petrified, completely petrified with this business. Anyway, the other thing that I got slapped a bit for was, well, two things. One, the Frenchman or someone had given me, Churchill had some autumn leaves scattered all over France, and it says something to the effect, before the leaves of autumn fall, we will release you, or words to that effect. I had one of those, which was to be a souvenir to take back with me. And I also had on one of the French stamps, I can't remember what value it was, but there was a bearded, white bearded fisherman, and he was pulling on a rope. Now the Germans had got the French had got a German stamps, I suppose, with Hitler on it. And they'd, at the right point in this rope, they'd inserted his head, like as if this chap was hanging him. For these Gestapo people didn't like that very much. So I had one of those in my possession, and they clouted me for that. Then I was put into Friend prison, where I spent about a month there.
After how long were you taken to Fresnes?
I was taken the next, the same day after they'd finished with me, which really wasn't long. It was frightening enough, but then they took me off to Fresnes. I can only presume that, they asked me where I was shot down, and I told them, because there was no sense in not telling them. Who did you meet? And I said, well, I didn't know anybody's names, but did you get help? Yes, I had help. Where was it? So I said, well, I don't know the names of anything, but I know where I went. So they then produced a map. So I just gave them a completely fictitious route, you see, and so that I didn't betray anybody, I really couldn't have done.